And you've been listening to E-Town on Coast Community Radio. That's KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. Welcome to Arts Live and Local. My name is Lisa Smith, and I'm sitting in today for Carol Newman, who's off celebrating Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. So to Carol and everyone else celebrating, Lashana Tova. And to my Muslim friends, I wish you a happy Islamic New Year, 1439 Hijri. There is, as per usual, a whole lot of rich local cultural activity to cover in the next hour. There's lots going on this weekend, from Blythe Spirit at the Coaster Theater in Cannon Beach, to a virtuoso woodcarver at the Bay Avenue Gallery in Ocean Park, Washington, to more than a dozen bands appearing during the Pacific Northwest Brew Cup, which started today at noon on the Astoria Riverwalk and runs through Sunday afternoon. The festival will be broadcast live right here on Coast Radio all day tomorrow, beginning with Troll Radio Review at 11 a.m. And the excellent Michael Hurley will be playing at the Brew Cup tonight at 5. So let's listen now to Portland Water from his 1998 CD, Long Journey.
The Portland Water, that's swirly and cold, and it swilled my body, but not the soul. Put a call up to Portland on the public telephone. They said it sure is raining here in the state of Oregon. Up in the canyon, looking down in the river, and the wind come blowing, and it make me shiver. Put a call up to Portland on the public telephone. They said it sure is raining here in the state of Oregon. You'll see them engines standing by the water. They say the river, that's the spirit's daughter. Put a call up to Portland on the public telephone. They said it sure is raining here in the state of Oregon. To the zoo, I saw the puma. I'm going back to Montezuma. Put a call up to Portland on the public telephone. They said it sure is raining here in the state of Oregon. Honey, 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 what you trying to do? Why don't you signal when you are through? Put a call up to Portland on the public telephone. They said it sure is raining here in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
That was Michael Hurley getting us ready for the long, wet winter with Portland Water. You can catch Michael tonight at 5 o'clock at the Pacific Northwest Brew Cup on the Astoria Riverwalk, right near Bowie Beer. My first guest today is Edward James, here to talk about the Noel Coward play opening tonight at the Coaster Theater in Cannon Beach. It's the classic comedy Blithe Spirit, which opened for the first time in London's West End back in 1941. Edward, welcome.
Thank you.
You're the play's director, so what can you tell us about the production?
I am, and it's interesting that you mentioned 1941. It's always struck me as kind of odd with Noel Coward that his plays did not acknowledge what was going on in the world, although maybe they did, because 1941, of course, the war was raging for London anyway, and he went off to Wales and in 6 days wrote Blithe Spirit, which is about ghosts and the supernatural. So maybe that is in some way linked to the war. And after the Civil War, you know, spiritualism was abundant all over the country because people wanted to get in touch with their deceased
well,
mates.
I thought the same thing, that it was odd that he was writing this comedic stuff at such a dire
right,
time. And yet it worked, I think. It was the longest running play for a long time in London, I think.
And, well, it's kind of an elitist play. As originally said, it's, you know, a black tie and this suave socialite, Charles Condamine, who arranges a seance in order to get material for a mystery that he's writing. And he's married for the second time. His first wife is deceased, and he accidentally conjures up the ghost or apparition or spirit of his first wife, who decides to come and live with them. It's kind of like Topper. I didn't check when Topper was written compared to this, but so the second wife comes to live with them, and of course causes
the first wife.
Comes to live with them, and of course creates chaos with the shaky relationship between Charles Condamine and his second wife.
Wife number two.
That's it.
And how is wife number one conjured up?
Through the seance, and then it doesn't work out. Nobody is happy. Charles Condamine is not happy. First wife isn't happy. Second wife isn't happy. And so the second wife tries to get rid of the first wife through the same medium that conjured her up. And then eventually the first wife is bored and there's not an awful lot that she can do on the earthly plane. So she wants to go home. And you'll have to come see the play to find out how that all ends up.
Well, we talked about this earlier before we went on the air, that it really, for the time, it was somewhat risque. I saw the film. I've never seen the play, but I saw the film, which had Rex Harrison in it. And in it, he declares, he's talking to his wife, the current wife, wife number two, and he says, "If you're trying to compile an inventory of my sex life, I feel it only fair to warn you that you've omitted several episodes. I shall consult my diary and give you a complete list after lunch."
Yeah, well, you know, affairs are mentioned, and sex life is mentioned, and that's about as risque as it gets.
Well, for the time. I mean, that line
that's amazing
was excised
to me, actually.
By the censors in the United States when the film came in.
That's interesting. Because it is very, very tame by today's standards. You know, working on Coward is... I looked at it first, and I thought, you know, this is kind of a museum piece. That this kind of comedy doesn't exist. But in a certain sense, he is... maybe not father, but maybe midwife to screwball comedies.
It definitely has a screwball quality.
Yeah, and the writing of those days, even in the movies, was pretty sharp and pretty heady. And we don't get that kind of writing too much anymore. Our attention spans are different than they once were. In fact, this was a three-act play at one time. We don't do three-act plays anymore. Three-act plays meant you got to go to the bar twice.
You know? That's right.
And the actors,
I vaguely
too.
Remember
the
that.
Actors, too.
That's right.
So, But Europeans are famous for being able to sit through long productions. The Germans bring their lunches and dinners to watch an opera.
Right,
and,
well, Wagner trained them, exactly. I think.
Yeah. But in working on it, the language is so rich, and he's also a good developer of plot. There are seven scenes in it, and every scene ends with a bang. Mm-hmm. Every scene ends smartly. And but it's the language. It's the language, the language, the language. And it's my feeling in one of the things that theater does is preserve and embolden language that... our language has been diminished, and right now we're speaking in emojis. You know, there was just on E Town, there was a guy who said, "I'm for words. Words work."
Right.
<You know>?
Right. One for all, and all for words.
Yeah exactly. and I think we need to be stimulated. I mean, that part of us needs to be stimulated, and Noel Coward does that. And comedy is always good.
How do you handle, in terms of stagecraft, how do you handle the ghosts? And how many set changes do you have? Do you have any set changes?
No, it takes place in one room. Mm-hmm. And in the living room of Charles Condamine, where he has a messy little nest where he does his writing. And the rest of the...
And juggles wives.
Yes, and juggles wives. And drinks. And when once upon a time smoked profusely, as in all Noel Coward plays, there's a lot you can do with a cigarette and expression.
It's true.
It can be thoughtful, it can be dismissive, and so on. We're pretty low tech. A lot of the modern productions of Bly Spirit at college campuses and so on, you know, it's all been... The doors are computerized and things falling are computerized and apparitions are computerized. I looked at this one Italian Blythe spirit in which the apparition comes swinging in through the French doors, landing delicately. I also looked at Mexican productions of Bly Spirit, and what was interesting there was it was all about ghosts. Mm-hmm. Mexicans love ghosts, so it was the ghosts were ghostly. Uh-huh. You know, they weren't beautiful and ephemeral, they were ghostly. Uh-huh. And in the Italian, of course, the arguments were not intellectual, the arguments were
so, how do you handle the ghosts?
How do I handle the ghosts? Well,
Should we come and see?
You'll have to come see. They're ethereal. Uh-huh. They're ethereal and gauzy and lovely. Uh-huh. Cannon Beach is a wonderful place if you haven't been down there recently. And the Coaster Theater is really a lovely, lovely place to see a play. And a lovely place to perform. The house is all wooden and carpeted and just has a really nice sound. It's like performing in a living room as far as the actors.
I haven't been there in a while. And I'm trying to recall, was it once a...
Roller rink.
A roller rink. Uh-huh. So that's why all the wood, I suppose.
Well, they've done it. It's been redone a couple times. Portland State had it for a while in the 60s. And then I think 1972, the Coaster Foundation started. And like I said, it's always great to go down to Cannon Beach. I'm surprised more Astorians don't go down there, and people from the peninsula. It is a long drive from the peninsula, but it's a lovely place to go.
Yes,
I enjoy going down there to work, I'll tell you that.
Well, back in the day, that was the place to go, the only place to go for food, for restaurants, good restaurants around the region.
And across the river. They're still there. They're still there, along with rabbits at Tolovana Park. And
and Manzanita. Yeah.
And a beautiful ocean.
Yes, indeed.
Beautiful ocean. I probably should mention that appearing in the show are some Coaster Theater regulars. David Sweeney plays the lead role of Charles Condamine. Karen Martin, who's a regular, plays Madame Arcati. Who else is a regular there?
She's the medium.
She is the medium. Mm-hmm. And then I got a whole bunch of newcomers. One, Katrina Goddertz, who is an ER doctor, which made scheduling a little tricky.
Oh, I bet.
And Evelyn Isaacson, who is a young lady working at the Christian Center there. And I got a couple newly new residents who have pretty good theatrical experience, Thomas and Kathy Ryan. And another regular plays Elvira, the first wife.
Wife number one. Yeah. And give us some
Ellen
details.
Ellen Jensen's her name, by the way.
Uh-huh. Give us some details on... opening night is tonight.
It opens tonight. Opening night is always exciting and a little suspenseful, and who knows what's going to happen. Right. Who knows what set things have been, oversights have been made with the set and how ready the actors are. We'll see tonight. It's very suspenseful. So it plays Fridays and Saturdays through October 28th. It's a long run, 6 weeks. And two Sunday performances at 3, October 1st and 15th, I'm pretty sure.
That's a huge amount of work.
That's a lot of, yeah. And well, there's
good for you. It's, and good for the crew.
It's more performances is always great. I mean, it benefits the theater, and it really benefits actors. I mean, I had a theater where we did 50 performances of every show. And by the time the actors were done with that, they felt good. They felt like they knew what they were doing. And it enhanced their craft, their ability to make a living.
Well, fabulous. I look forward to seeing it break a leg tonight. And thank you, Edward James, director of Noel Coward's fabulous Blithe Spirit, opening tonight at the Coaster Theater Playhouse in Cannon Beach and running through October 28th.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
Thanks a lot.
Searching for the rose that will deliver me from the doorstep of this house back to where I belong. But along the way, I flats, fall, slips, and cracks. Some friends who really knew you pass on. So, where'd we spend time out in the cold? Keep yourself steady, standing up for your own. Hear yourself breathe. That's the way things seem to go. Every other day, just don't know. It comes around the corner at the speed of sound. Flat on your back, you've lost your crown. Changed a lot of clothes, but stay true to how you must spend your time to the gallery been exposed. Tell you hard work what you should equal double in your mind what you could. So when those folks blow that insecure code, keep yourself steady, knowing right serves the bold. Feel yourself breathe. That's the way things seem to go. Every other day, you just don't know. It comes around the corner at the speed of sound. You're flat on your back, you've lost your crown. Go.
this move. Stand yourself up the seats, reserved for the fool.
Don't be a fool.
Staring at your feet.
Don't be a fool.
Though the wrong ones put you down, there's some good people you need to meet. Gotta keep things close together, like a driver going to get in your car. Yourself to roll back to the grand coliseum that is life, to fight to save your soul.
That was Ben Yarrow performing That's the Way Things Seem to Go from their recently released CD One Step Ahead of Your Past. You can hear Ben Yarrow live at the Voodoo Room tomorrow night beginning at 9 o'clock, or on Sunday at the Brew Cup stage on the Astoria Riverwalk beginning at 3:45-ish. 3:45, 4, somewhere around there. There's no cover charge at either venue. You're listening to Arts Live and Local. I'm Lisa Smith, sitting in today for Carol Newman, and my next guest is Lisa Kerr of the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition, here to tell us a bit about the coalition and some grant opportunities for artists and cultural organizations based in Clatsop County. Welcome, Lisa, and thanks for coming.
Yes, it's my pleasure.
So please fill us in on the coalition's raison d'etre and funding priorities and applicant eligibility and so on.
Okay. Well, it's nice to be here with such good news, because I'm here to talk about opportunities that arts groups and heritage and cultural groups have to actually apply for funding to help do projects and continue their viability of their groups. So
that is very good news.
It is good news. And so we are encouraging people all over Clatsop County to apply. We give up to $2,000 per grant, but a lot of people apply. And so very rarely do we give everybody everything they want, but we try to include as many applicants as we can.
How many grants do you generally give each year?
Well, anywhere from 15 to 20.
And they range in
They range in amounts from $500 to $2,000.
Mm-hmm. And that's terrific.
It is. It's really terrific. And we actually, it's a really great grant application, because at one point I actually was an applicant when I worked for a different organization. And so I found that it's a very simple application to fill out. Very straightforward. There's actually going to be two workshops held to help people, potential applicants, assist them in filling out the grant, and also to answer questions. So it helps them complete the application. And those workshops are Thursday, September 28th at 6:30 p.m. in the Art Loft at 106 3rd Street in Astoria. The second workshop is Saturday, September 30th at 11 a.m. at the Seaside Public Library Community Room at 1131 Broadway in Seattle. I'm in Seattle and Seaside. And so,
can you repeat those two dates?
Yes. Thursday, September 28th at 6:30 at the Art Loft. Mm-hmm. And Saturday, September 30th at 11 a.m. at the Seaside Public Library. And there's a great website. The Clatsop County Cultural Coalition, just put that in on Google and you'll get the whole website. It has the grant application, so you can look at it before you go to the workshop. You don't have to go to the workshop. It's just helpful. and it will help you answer the questions in a way that gives us the information that we need in order to fund you.
I was thinking that it might be worthwhile for people who are interested in grant writing, just grant writing generally, would to come.
Absolutely.
And listen to what you right. have to say.
And you don't have to be a 501c3 to apply.
I think that's terrific.
And we actually, the kind of projects we fund are ones that preserve sustained usage of physical facilities and that strengthen the health and the existence of all kinds of arts groups, performing arts, visual arts. So an example would be we did fund a grant to help preservation of the Butterfield Cottage in Seaside. So that's like a physical plant. Mm-hmm. And then we also have done, you know, help fund the comedy festival in Cannon Beach and the reading program for the library, a summer drama program for children. So it's all those kinds of things. The things that we do not fund are personnel salaries, travel reimbursement, deficit reduction, lobbying, tuition for academic study, personal equipment acquisition. But that doesn't mean we can't do help with acquisition for a group of as long as the group tells us how they will divest themselves of whatever equipment it is should they no longer need it or cease to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to fill out. The due date for the grant is Halloween,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be physically in the post office box of Clatsop County Cultural Coalition on the due date. It can't be postmarked on the due date. So I remember when I applied for one, I think I ran it up here physically, but the best thing to do is to send it in the mail a week ahead of time. I just recently did mail from Astoria to Cannon Beach and it took 5 days. So.
Yeah. It must go to Portland before it hits
Astoria. I think it does.
Well, jeepers, so. This is great news. It is. It's wonderful to support the arts, and it's wonderful to be an individual who can have a project and not have to be a 501c3. That's a rare thing.
Yes, it is. And all the money for our project, our funding, comes from the Oregon Cultural Trust, which is a state organization.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's great. And it's also, you know, I know that donating to the Cultural Trust is a tax credit. And so, you know, there's a lot of advantages to supporting the arts in our community.
What's the process for reviewing the grant proposals?
Well, first of all, one of the main things, and that's why I encourage people to take the workshops, because if some of the questions are not properly filled out, it makes it difficult for us to decide or determine if this is an appropriate grant to fund. So it's really the ones that fill out, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, are the ones that are easy to speak about amongst ourselves and easy to determine if it's appropriate. Ones that leave out huge sections of information, it's harder. There is accountability. I mean, at the end of the grant period, you do need to write up, you know, fill in a sheet to say how you met your goals, et cetera, mm-hmm. how you spent the money. But there's not a lot of huge budgeting type things in this particular grant application.
Well, it's terrific. Lisa Kerr of Clatsop County Cultural Coalition, I thank you for this. Thank you
yes,
for coming.
Sure. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Yes.
That was the fourth movement of Telemann's Viola Concerto in G Major. Richard Edlinger conducting the Slovak Chamber Orchestra, Capella Istropolitana. In the studio with me now are Dwight Caswell and Phyllis Taylor, here to promote a classical concert planned for this Sunday that will include some Telemann and is a fundraiser to aid Hurricane Irma relief efforts. Actually, all these hurricanes' relief efforts. So let me turn on their microphones. Thank you both for being here.
Oh, glad to have us.
So what's on the program? Where is it? When is it? And how much money are you going to raise?
Well, we're going to how much money to answer that question first is going to depend on how many people come. It's a free concert. We're just asking people to make goodwill donations. So if you come to the show and make enough donations, we'll have plenty of money to donate. It's going to happen on Sunday at 1 o'clock at Pioneer Presbyterian Church, which is that little brick church right next to Camp Rialea. If you turn like you're going to Camp Rialea, you see it. This is the one that always has the daffodil cross, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We started out when we had the idea of doing this. It was going to be relief for Irma, and who knows how many hurricanes are going to need relief by the time we actually send the money in. So,
yeah, it's true, yeah. And what's on the program?
A lot of different stuff. It's mostly Baroque. There's Telemann, like the Telemann Viola Concerto. You just heard Jan Faber is going to be our viola soloist.
Lovely.
We're an interesting little group. We have a recorder. We have, in the summer, we have Jan on violin and viola. I play cello. Then we have Liam on bassoon. But in the winter, we just have a recorder, a bassoon, and a cello. And there's makes it for a bit of a challenge. So I've started playing second violin.
What happens
cello.
To Jan in the winter?
He lives disappears? On a houseboat in Fort Myers, and the houseboat was spared by Irma.
Oh, but this is quite close to his home.
Yeah,
I see. Good for you.
Yeah, he lives here in the summer.
So what did you say that there was some Irish music too?
Yes. I don't know how to pronounce it. We always call it "She Begs for More."
But Carolyn, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. It's very famous.
Uh-huh. And I couldn't find it. I looked for it, and I couldn't find it because I couldn't really find it because of the spelling part, I suppose. I'm not sure.
And we're also doing a Finnish piece that's folk music. It's a lot of fun, and it's in 5/4, so you have that mental challenge of counting in five, you know, so very lively. So,
what do you play?
Cello.
And how long, and the name of this, of the group is Concert of All Sorts.
Mm-hmm. It was originally, I believe, founded by Charlie Swigert and Drew Herzig.
Oh.
And when they moved, and I played with them, and Ray Lund was the harpsichordist. I played with them for 3 years. And then last fall, when Charlie and Drew moved to Pittsfield, Massachusetts, Ray had a friend who retired to Portland, who's a cellist, and Ray has a house in or an apartment in Portland. So they started playing together. So that just left the other three of us here. So we've done trios and duets all winter, but then when Jan came back to Astoria this summer, we were able to do quartets and things and having a great time doing it.
So this will be the last time we'll be hearing the quartet for until next summer.
Until next summer.
Yeah, we had to schedule this around...
when Jan goes back to Florida.
Uh-huh. And what's your involvement, Dwight?
Well, I'm pastor of the church.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have been since April. And we're trying to come up with ways that church can be involved in the community. So this was the first thing that came to mind, mainly because all the years I spent with the music festival, I know some musicians around. And so we're looking at a concert series in the winter. We'd hoped to put one together in the fall. We couldn't, but we have this, and we decided to make it a fundraiser. And so, I might as well plug one other thing we're doing. October 14th, Saturday, we're doing a blessing of the animals, which is nothing about art, but it's about, you know, kids and pets. So
yes. And they're doing it across the river, too, and so I'm going to bring my two dogs.
Well, get them blessed twice. You know, that can't hurt. I've done this at other churches, and so I've blessed everything from tarantulas to rattlesnakes to horses. Some of them I blessed from a little farther away than others.
I bet. Well, tell me a little bit more about where this money's going to go? Because I'm assuming that you'll raise some real money.
Well, we hope so. And the Presbyterian Church has a disaster relief fund, which is very efficient in that the national church underwrites the administration. So 100% of all the donated money goes to the relief that they're doing. This operates all over the world. They have a particular fund for hurricane relief this year. And they're very effective in the way they distribute it. So it's a very good charity, and you can be sure that your money is going to the right place.
That's wonderful, really. I commend you for this. Let's see. Just to repeat, this is going to be on Sunday, September 24th, this coming Sunday at 1 p.m. at the Pioneer Presbyterian Church, which is down there in Warrenton, adjacent to Camp Rylea.
Yeah, Camp Rylea. Mm-hmm.
And for further information, people can call 503-861-2421.
Actually, at this point, they're probably better off calling me because our secretary won't be in. So
we have a direct line to
you.
Yeah,
let me just, with fear and trembling, I give out my cell phone number.
Right, to the world.
503-883-3097.
Okay, that's a direct line to Dwight, who has a direct line to God, so you know who to call. Dwight Caswell and Phyllis Taylor, thank you so much for coming out tonight and today, and great work you're doing.
Glad to do it.
Thanks again. That was Coldplay's Hymn for the Weekend, performed by the classically trained Brooklyn duo. Because, well, it's Friday and the beginning of another fabulous weekend here in paradise. You're listening to Arts Live and Local. I'm Lisa Smith, sitting in for Carol Newman, who, don't worry, will be back in this chair next week, I promise. My next guest is Janine Grafton, owner and founder of Astoria's River Sea Gallery, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. Janine is a longtime leader within Astoria's arts scene, passionately committed to supporting the North Coast creative economy. Many credit Janine and her husband, Ed Overbay, among others, for helping transform Astoria into the center of creativity it is today. Full disclosure, River Sea underwrites Arts Live and Local, and for that, we are very grateful. Welcome, Janine.
Hi, Lisa.
Before River Sea opened, local artists referred to Astoria as a closet arts town because artwork was not very easy to find. So what was Astoria's art scene like in 1997? Was there one?
There definitely was a vibrant art scene at the time. However, you're right. In fact, I came up with that closet arts town term because you could literally drive through Astoria and not be aware at all. And many people did drive through. You would not at all be aware that there was a lot of art being made here. There weren't very many places where you could buy art at retail or see art shown. However, there were, I mean, Astoria has a long history of being a town full of artists. So if you could peel back the layers of time and imagine a town that with no restored Liberty Theater. Liberty Theater at that time was a closed-up movie theater that had been divided into three different spaces. The Elliott Hotel was basically a squatter's hotel. The Commodore Hotel wasn't there, and there was a news agent's on the corner.
We've come a long, long way in 20 years, haven't we?
It was very different as far as the street scene, but there were lots of artists working in their studios, and there was a fabulous gallery in downtown on 10th Street called Ricciardi Gallery. And in 1997, it had just recently been sold by the owner, Corinne Ricciardi, to Pat Shannon, who then operated it for years after that and renamed it Pacific Rim Gallery. So that gallery had been around since the mid-80s, and Harry Bennett showed there, John Stahl, Noel Thomas showed there, lots of regional artists were in that gallery, and it was well known throughout the Northwest as being a great gallery.
But it was the only game in town in 1997.
It was pretty much the only game. There were gift stores. There were places that you could buy maybe antiques and some artwork. And then there was the gallery at the college. And the college, led by Royal Nebaker, had a wonderful art department. And he was a huge influence on the art scene in Astoria.
Mm-hmm. So you and Ed together were willing to take a chance on Astoria before others were willing to jump in and invest time or money.
Well, I have to say that I stand on the shoulders of those who went before and part of a continuum. So I don't feel like we started anything. We just, at the time, also took a chance because I could feel that the time was ripe for more in the way of a gallery. And I felt that I had the background and experience to pull it off, and it was a dream of mine. And I found just the perfect space. And
is it the space you're in now?
Yes, it's the space I'm in now.
It's slightly enlarged since the beginning, though, right?
We've enlarged it twice. So, yes, uh-huh. We now are the whole footprint of the building. But we opened with about half the space. We had originally about 2,300 square feet. No, wait. We originally had about probably 1,600 square feet, then expanded a little bit, adding our exhibition room, and now we have about 4,000 to 4,500 square feet.
And where are you located?
We're on Commercial Street between 11th and 12th.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Right, windows always filled with great art. Tell me a little bit more about what it was like in 1997, 20 years ago. The Liberty was not the Liberty. It was closed pretty much as a theater, and it was three different spaces.
It was three different theater spaces, but they had been closed.
So it was pretty much mothballed.
Pretty much mothballed. And then the downtown had a much different flavor. There were a lot of traditional clothing stores. Where Carruthers is now was Owl Drug. So mm-hmm. there's a drugstore in the corner.
Weren't there a lot more bars?
There were a lot more raunchy bars.
Kind of bars where there's a lot of nightlife that was kind of, you know, people. It was the fishing town with a drinking town with a fishing problem.
Exactly.
Situation.
It was still a bit like that, yes. Mm-hmm. But you could feel that things were changing because it was moving away from an extraction industry economy that had kind of bottomed out when the plywood mill closed and fishing wasn't going so well anymore.
Right.
And logging had a downturn. So it was like in this transitional period where the town maybe didn't quite know what its future would be. But it had, from when I moved here in 93, I felt really drawn to the downtown because of its architecture and the scale of it. It just felt like it would be a great place to be. It had a lot of potential. And back then, whenever you said downtown Astoria, the response would be, it has so much potential.
Right. And it seems to have actually reached its potential or met its potential of late. All those storefronts that were empty, the Flavelle buildings, et cetera, they're bought. They're being refurbished.
Huge progress in that.
Did you anticipate this when you started Riversea so long ago?
I could see it, but I'll tell you what. I was here before I opened the gallery. They were filming Free Willy, and at the foot of 14th, they had this fake fish market, like a market set up on the dock out there, and just like they do in Seattle, that sort of thing. And I remember thinking, wow, it would be great if there would be a downtown market. And so when the Sunday market opened, I felt like we should be pinching ourselves because it was like a dream became real that we could actually pull that off.
So much has happened in the past 20 years. Now, how do you think Astoria's past early days shaped its present and drawn people to it?
Well, I think because it's an anchor community rather than a suburb, so it's always had to fend for itself. It's not attached to, say, Portland in the way that people commute, you know, maybe a little bit, but not like, say, Hood River is basically almost a suburb of Portland because you could live there and get all your cultural fixes in Portland. So Astoria's had to come up with its own scene. It has to rely on itself. And it's full of working people. Plus, it's a small town, so people of all sorts are thrown together and know each other. And that makes life so much more interesting. If you move here from a city like I did, I grew up in my early days, lived and worked in Portland, and this is so much different. You know so much more about what's going on all levels of society.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to be part of the community here, if you will.
Definitely. It's easy to get involved. And I was a person that always wanted to be more involved when I lived in Portland. But in Portland, for instance, if you volunteer with an organization, you join the outer ring of it. Here you could step right up and...
Right. Here I am doing Carol Newman's show. And, you know, gee, who would have thunk it? So let's see, what's on exhibition now at Riversea, and what will people who visit this weekend see that will knock their socks off? There's always something.
We have two shows each month. And so this month we have two solo shows. In the main exhibition room is Robert Paulman, local artist, and many people here will know him. He has spent the summer up at the top of Coxcomb Hill by the Astor Column painting the landscape in all directions. So he was up there working in plein air, and one of the pieces that he did is a series of drawings that are connected together. It's an 18-foot panorama done in powdered charcoal on paper.
I saw that. They're all triptychs. They're cut into triptychs, so to speak. And
they were done at, yeah, they were.
And they're all sold.
They were sold to one person, but he had he had intended that they could be sold as triptychs, but one collector bought the whole thing.
Oh, how brilliant that is.
Yeah, it'll
be
great.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be fun to display in their home.
And the paintings are marvelous. They really are.
Yes, and we've hung them in the direction that you would see them, so you can stand there and be surrounded by the view from the column.
It's very, very beautiful. Yeah. And he uses the Indian names for the rivers.
The show is called Three Rivers, and I have not memorized the Indian names, but it's basically the Yangtze River, the Columbia River, and the Natal. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see the Indian names in my mind, but I'm not going to pronounce them.
And how long does that show up? And there you've got another one, too, another show.
Right. We have another artist, Leslie Lee from Portland, mm-hmm. who is a very well-known ceramic artist nationally. But about a decade ago, she decided to take a turn into painting. And in this show, she has paintings that started out as abstracts. So there's an abstract underlayer, and then she intuitively finds figures within the abstract painting. And that leads to another figure, and they start telling her a story. But the story behind each painting is often based on current events, because she's very affected about what's happening in society. And so anyone coming into the show should ask us if they're interested what the background stories on the paintings are.
I will, next time I'm in there, which will be soon. Now, one last question. What guides your curatorial eye and choices? Because what you've got in the gallery, there's just so much. There's paintings, there's glass, there's ceramics, there's sculpture, there's jewelry, there's furniture, there's light fixtures, there's so much. And it's all it's highly affecting, I find. How do you choose? What guides you?
Well, I think I like having a variety. I like having an inspired variety of work, because when people come in, I want them to just feel like maybe they came in to look at a watercolor landscape or whatever, but then they see something totally different that they could get excited about. So I like to inspire people to look at different types of art. You know, I want a variety of subject and style and medium in the gallery. And I would also say that I base it on my lifelong interest in history, especially architecture, sociology, and fine craft. I grew up, my birth family has quite a few artists and craftspeople and collectors. So I was influenced by that early on, that you could have around you things that you love that aren't maybe currently trending. So rather than being affected commercially by what you might surround yourself with or what you might do, you let your muse guide you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly works.
Thank you,
Janine Grafton of River Sea Gallery. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and congratulations on your 20th anniversary.
Thanks.
I would take you with me if I could.
That was My Love, performed by Jenny Don't and the Spurs, who are playing a free concert this Sunday, September 24th at 5 p.m. at the Cannon Beach City Park, sponsored by the Tolovana Arts Colony. Here are some additional weekend highlights. Artist-activist Holcomb Waller's Notes from the Riverkeepers tour makes a stop here in Astoria this Sunday, September 24th at the Columbian Theater. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Show starts at 7. Audience Q&A at 8:15. The post-performance conversation will be moderated by our own Carol Newman. And I think Roger Rocca of Coast Radio and the Columbia River Estuary Action Team Create will also be on hand. Holcomb Waller's Notes from the Riverkeepers is a music-driven performance broadly exploring the history of crude oil by rail transportation in the Columbia River Gorge, culminating with the nearly catastrophic Union Pacific oil train derailment spill and fire in Mosier, Oregon in June last year. We all remember that. Tickets run between $8 and $22, and you can get them most easily online at brownpapertickets.com/event/3081997. That's brownpapertickets.com/event/3081997. Also on tap around here, in addition to all that beer and music at Brew Cup, is a very cool music and dining package cooked up jointly by the Liberty Theater at the Pack and Carruthers Restaurant for tomorrow, Saturday, September 23rd. You start your experience with the Portland Chamber Orchestra, featuring Finnish pianist Rusa Marie Teppo at the Liberty Theater. After the performance, you cross the street to Carruthers Restaurant for a special pre-fixed dinner. Then you head to the Pack to end the evening with opera and tango. So, for tickets, you want to go to Liberty Theater, libertyastoria.org. We're just about out of time. I think we are out of time, actually. So please pick up a copy of Coast Weekend or Hip Fish for comprehensive coverage of what's happening this weekend and next week. There is so much I wasn't able to mention, so much to do, very exciting. Coming up next, Left, Right, and Center, followed by All Things Considered at 5, New World Beat at 6, and Caribbean Moon at 7. You're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9, and KCPB, KTCB 89.5. Carol Newman will be back hosting the show next Friday. I'm Lisa Smith, wishing you a fabulous, fabulous art-filled weekend. Ciao.